Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Police for Reform. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us today, we have a former judge and current district attorney in the state of Colorado, also very active with LEAP, as well as the Normal Legal Committee and the Normal Board of Directors. He wears many hats. It's Lenny Freeling joining us here on the show. Lenny, welcome back.
Russ, a pleasure. Not prosecuting, not a district attorney, private criminal defense with...
Right.
Mostly drug cases, you knew that, of course.
Yes, yes, of course, criminal defense. And I have to ask you, how was the Aspen shindig this year?
Every year, it just surpasses the previous year. The magical moments at Owl Farm are, well, magical moments. I don't know how else to say it.
I sadly had to miss it this year, and I was so disappointed because I was just eagerly awaiting Jerry Goldstein's opinion of Neil Gorsuch. So, doggone. Anyway, let's get to the story here with Police for Reform. On this segment, we like to talk about what's going on in law enforcement with respect to the war on drugs and even on a broader perspective. And one of the topics that came up recently with respect to post-legalization, well, Colorado and Washington, D.C. and Washington State and a lot of places, is when they look at the statistics of the people who are still being arrested or cited for what crimes remain for cannabis, they still remain disparately Black and Latino people. And I wanted you to address that and from your view there in post-legalization Colorado and as a defense attorney.
As a defense attorney, I can tell you pretty confidently what I am seeing are very few small pot cases. People that were once getting hassled for an ounce or two or a joint are just not ending up in the system much. What I am seeing, though, is a real focus, because we're in this interim stage where we have more and more states legal, but plenty of states where it is illegal. So Colorado pot has both the reputation and the pricing, so that the real prosecution focus is on larger groups, bigger quantities, and pretty much stuff going out of state. And then secondarily, what I'm also seeing a lot of are people getting busted with too many plants, 50s, 70s, not shocking numbers, but more than they're allowed.
More than you're supposed to have.
More than you're supposed to have, and even that, I say that because it's what the prosecutions are based on, but the laws are somewhat contradictory. Our Constitution, state Constitution, permits larger plant counts than many municipalities, many counties, and some of the state statutes. So it's pretty confusing. I have people coming to me just asking straight out, can you tell me how much I can grow? And the answer tends to take an hour figuring out where they are in the state and what card they do or don't have and how large a doctor recommendation do they have. With the current situation, a caregiver, a primary caregiver, can have five patients, up to five people that they're growing pot for, and each of those five theoretically can have a 99 plant recommendation from a doctor, with the state issuing their medical card, their red cards, what they're called out here, and end up with one grower growing 500 plants, of which 250 can be flowering.
Wow.
As we know, that's a lot of pot for five people.
Yes, it is.
So I'm sure there are some people that are making various types of extracts and edibles and salves where larger quantities are essential. But it doesn't pass the straight face test to be growing 500 plants and 250 flowering plants unless you're a really bad gardener. And I've had bad gardener defenses. It's too much pot. It's worth too much because of the illegality in so many states. So we just had, over the last month or less, the largest post-legalization pot case yet. 74 yes. people were indicted, state indictment, for racketeering, for, it's a 30 or 40 count indictment, including the class 2 felony racketeering, including what we call DF1s, which are drug felony 1s, and a conviction to a DF1 carries a minimum mandatory 8-year prison sentence.
Hmm. And of course, our opponents jump on this recent news and say, see, legalization doesn't work. They're using the cover of legalization to grow and sell out of state. And how do you respond to that criticism?
Some people are doing that. Most people are not. People that were buying illegally historically are going to the store. People are electing to buy legally. For the most part, medical cards, from what I'm seeing, for the most part are issued to people with legitimate medical needs, and they're taking advantage of the approximately a third less cost if you buy on the medical side instead of the recreational side. We finally, and this was so embarrassing that we hadn't done it yet, added PTSD to the list of, quote, approved medical conditions. So PTSD sufferers can now legally get their red card and the advantage of the discount.
That's great news. That's great news. And as we move on in post-legalization Colorado, we have the threat still of other states, you know, recently it was Oklahoma and I think Nebraska, maybe Kansas, petitioning the Supreme Court. Now we have a new Supreme Court with Neil Gorsuch on the bench. What do you see as the future of that? And there was the case there, and I think this is Colorado, the RICO case, where the people that didn't like the smell were saying it was making their property values go down. Either one of those, if you want to tackle, that would be great.
The one that's kind of the sleeper time bomb is the private RICO situation.
Right, right.
The court just recently let that go forward, and potentially that is a disastrous problem, and people need to pay attention to it. And because legally it's fairly complex, it's easier to not pay attention to. It doesn't get the press that many of the other things are getting, and it, as I say, it's a time bomb. So the private RICO cases are a huge concern. That's racketeering again.
And how does that apply? For people that don't understand what RICO does, I mean, how does someone use RICO to make someone stop growing weed?
I believe what they are doing is seeking both financial relief, money damages, and injunctive relief, which they're entitled to under the RICO statute. RICO's designed for organized crime and has requirements, and over the years has been used to go after large criminal organizations.
And to be clear, this is a civil case, not a criminal case being brought. Is that correct?
Correct. People think of RICO as being criminal. The base
right, like the mob.
Case. Exactly, yeah. Where it was originally designed, I'm sure. There is provision for these private lawsuits. The neighbor claiming their property value has gone down, which is hard to claim in Colorado because property values are way up.
Yes.
As you mentioned, claiming odor issues and ending up with substantial leverage in court.
It's like triple damages, isn't it?
Yes. It's just disastrous when applied to our situation here.
So we'll keep an eye on that case for certain and get more detail on that as we continue throughout the show. I also want to make sure I have time for the Supreme Court because of that threat of, Jeff Sessions being the attorney general, who knows what he's going to do. But these states that want to sue, saying that Colorado's legalization is infringing on their state's right to be prohibitionist. And what you think of the chances of that?
Ultimately, I think it's a press issue. I think it'll get fought, and personally, professionally, I simply can't imagine rolling back the clock. I can't see it happening. I can't see undoing medical. Undoing recreational is more of a threat, but even then, Pandora's box has been opened. The genie is out of the bottle. See, I avoided the mixed metaphor there.
Very well done.
Thank you, thank you. And I don't think it can be undone. If you read Sessions' statement, it's not quite as bad as being reported in the press. It's more in terms of priorities, and I think it's more paying lip service. I hate to be wrong. I hope I'm not wrong. I don't think I am, of course. And what I am seeing, I'm not seeing much in the way of federal prosecution. What I am seeing is federal assistance to state drug task forces in various guises, and we know at least at the moment, if it's not allowed to sunset, the feds are not supposed to be interfering, at least justice is not supposed to be interfering with regulated state medical programs that are vigorously enforced. What I've seen is Homeland Security getting involved. So what I'm not seeing the federal prosecutions, but I am seeing federal power, and this is not new. This is not just post-Sessions. This has been going on. And they're also using the threat of the federal prosecution. Work with us or we'll go after you state and federally, which they can do if they choose to. I'm not seeing it happen yet. So I see Sessions that, starting at the top with Trump, I can just see him behind closed doors saying, I don't care. Why are we even talking about this? It's good business, and I don't care. That's what I imagine Trump to be saying. I think Sessions is in a period, is in a position where he can't say nothing, so he says something. Whether anything will come of it, in my mind, every state that joins, even if it's with one of the mini medical programs that really doesn't address patient needs adequately, and failing to address patient needs adequately can happen in many, many ways, whether it's by limiting the conditions, limiting the outlets to two or three or six in very large states. But even so, when they look at the numbers, it still counts as a state that has passed medical. And I believe the last number I saw, I think, was 39 that we were able to count. That had
we're down to just Idaho, Kansas, Nebraska, and South Dakota that do not have something, at least even CBD, in their law.
Wow, that's great news. The more states that are on board, the more impossible. Simply impossible it becomes to dismantle it. Now, I'm saying that, and as I'm saying that and believing what I say, I do think back to alcohol prohibition, where it was a huge, flourishing industry that the feds did come in and attempt to shut down. And, of course, we know that that not only didn't work, as prohibition never does, it was disastrous and just drove it underground. So with the preference being to not have it underground, to have it regulated, to have it taxed, I don't see us going backwards. I see small examples here and there that will get a lot of press that will allow the feds to say, see, we're doing something. And additionally, what I also think I'm seeing, for example, the 74-count indictment, what I'm seeing is when they are looking at a gray market, a smuggling operation or something they're believing is a smuggling operation, they're going after it very, very aggressively. Part of that is, once again, you've heard me say this, gentlemen, we have to protect our phony baloney jobs.
Right, right.
Part of it may, and maybe I'm giving the state too much credit, but part of it allows the state to say to the feds, see, we're enforcing it rigorously, so you don't need to bother us.
a lot of show involved in a lot of these activities. I would agree with that as well. Lenny Freeling from Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Before we let you go, we remind folks that you can find your speaker in your area by going to policeforreform.com or leap.cc is another one you can use if you don't want to have to type so much. And Lenny, thanks for joining us again today and lending us your wisdom.
Russ, as always, thank you for having me. My pleasure.